Welcome to UberCube. This is the podcast where we discuss all things cube, but with refreshments. This is your host, Anthony Adams, a.k.a. UberBear, and I'm joined by my co-pilot, Master in Arms,
Stu, a.k.a. Stu.
Just a.k.a. Just Stu. Just a.k.a.
Just a.k.a.
I've always struggled with the a.k.a. For those who have been listening to this podcast from the beginning, you will probably notice that sometimes I just drop off an A for no real good reason. It's a struggle for me sometimes.
Pronunciation is definitely something that you could do with
also maybe known.
Working on a little bit.
Question mark.
Question mark?
Yeah. So, we've got a fun episode lined up for you here. We're going to do something a little different. This is going to be just a little teaser. You okay with a little teaser?
Absolutely.
This is a kind of a chain idea of the Magic and Poker that myself and Christian Anderson decided to do one night, where it got a little meta. We did something a little different.
Nothing wrong with a bit of meta conversation.
Well, yeah, not everything has to be just so empirical serious. Data, so serious. So sometimes we just want to talk a little bit more like scenario-based and what would you do? Kind of like the what if, right, of the Marvel Universe. We kind of want to roll with it sometimes.
I'm a DC guy. No. I'm just kidding. I'm neither.
Yeah, Steve's not a comic book big fan. Before we go into the topic that's going to be meta, so if you wish to bounce out now is the time. We're going to do the thing that we always do here at UberCube, and we're going to enjoy our libations of the particular pod.
We are. What you drinking today, Anthony?
I've got a weird one this time. It's Pithead Brewing Company. Somewhere out of Wisconsin. Not going to butcher the name for those Wisconsinians that I'm going to do that because someone will get triggered. But it is a West Coast style IPA. It looks pretty delicious. My wifey, picked these up for me from Aldi. That means she put the quarter inside of the grocery cart to go inside to get these. So maximum effort did occur. What do you got there,
Steve? Congrats to Anthony's wife. And I got a Guinness.
Nice.
Keeping it simple.
Keeping it meta.
All right. Guinness is a meta beer. I think it fits well for this discussion.
So we have a title for this episode, but as we progress through this, you're going to find out it's a little loosey-goosey. And it's going to be Bolt the Bird? Question mark. All right. And the way we're going to go about doing this is we're going to lay out some scenarios, and then we're going to talk amongst ourselves to decide how might we navigate this particular situation.
Absolutely.
Stu, would you be so kind as to take on the first idea that we're going to take on here?
All right. So, again, these are kind of meta discussions, right? And it came about from some discussion that we were having about, episode ideas and really just, Anthony and I get together and we're just hanging out and talking about magic and talking about cube and talking about all the whatnots. And counter magic came up.
Yep.
And we started talking about when do you counter? What do you counter?
When? Timing?
Timing.
Tension.
Power level.
Is it relevant?
Exactly. I deal with it outside of this counter spell? There's a whole, you could wax lyrical on this subject, I think, for hours and hours.
Oh, this is exponential. But what gets through the coffee filter, basically?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Right. So the first thing we came up with, and I think I would imagine that a lot of people would agree on where we ended up with this, right? So pretty easy scenario. You're sitting there, you've got two islands, untapped, and a counter spell in your hand, and your opponent casts a tutor, and specifically we'll just go with Demonic Tutor. It's the same CMC.
And we'll for those that are new to the game, these are going to be like, these are the forever cards, right?
Yeah.
But we Super will, iconic. For the courteous, for the courtesy of the audience, counter spell,
right.
two blue, counter target spell.
Exactly.
Demonic Tutor, one black, one colorless, search your library for a card, and put the card in your hand, then shuffle your library.
Yeah, so not a whole lot of introduction needed, I think, aficionados of magic. But the discussion was, do you counterspell the Demonic Tutor?
And that's it's an intriguing question. I think the universal response is most people let it go by.
They would.
However, I wanted a devil's advocate a little bit. And that was the whole point of this is to be, when we said we're going to be meta because there's a lot that goes into, do you let this go by? And I don't care if this is a cube. I don't care if this is Commander. I don't care if this is some kind of legacy format, right?
Right.
At the end of the day, it's going to be based on knowledge. And that's why we're kind of tying back into our poker episode. It's based on knowledge of the table, timing, tension, what you know about the opponent and what you've seen, right?
Yeah.
It's the hidden knowledge. It's the hidden information.
Sometimes it's not so hidden.
Correct. Right. I mean, some of these are going to look blatantly obvious as to what they're chasing, but Well, let's use EDH as an example. I'll see this often, right? The mana hose always happens. You know, you get the one player. We talked about this in our last episode. That's grumbling about, you know, I'm short on my mana, whatever. Suddenly, their demonic tutor becomes just an evolving wilds at the end of the day. I mean, that's we'll go more of exploration or
sure.
You know what I'm trying to say.
Yes,
but they're chasing this very specific card in order to complete their mana set.
Yes,
whereas in a traditional game, you know, you're always seeking out a win con or something like that. It's what people believe. And you want to let this go past so that you can actually take out the original threat. But here's the huge question mark. You have no idea what that threat is.
Correct.
You don't know if it's even a threat. It could be a land, a win con. Maybe they just grabbed a permission spell or a protection spell for the current board state.
Yep.
You literally just allowed information to be given away.
Right.
Whereas in your current status, the knowledge you did receive is, I want to go get a thing.
Yes. You're
asking me a permission. Can I do that? Yes, yes or no? You've now said, basically, maybe, in my opinion. And then their maybe is, I go get whatever I want. You now no longer know what it is. And that comes coming back to that meta conversation that Christian and I both had about poker, where you don't know now if they're going to bait and switch you now. Because they've given up this intentional information of, I'm going to go get this thing. But at the same time, they may play forward on a threat, Gnota Gargoth or something like that, throw it out, but only for the purpose of baiting out a primetime. I mean, but you've now allowed that to occur
yeah.
by allowing this to get through the said coffee filter.
Yes. And I would say that myself, I tend to try and play as efficiently as possible. I am certainly not above demonic tutoring for a land. If I need it, I would much prefer not to do so.
Right.
But I will go and get a rock, I will go and get a permission spell.
Right.
If I feel like I need to protect my win con, if I've already got it in hand, or if I'm just trying to get the second piece of a combo, right? I'm going to try and be as efficient with it as possible if I can. Now, does that mean I might sit back on it a little bit? You know, I'll hold that demonic tutor in my hand if I think, oh, maybe want a couple more draw spells, see if I can get, you know, one of my combo pieces in hand, or maybe I draw a force of will or something like that. So I've already got some protection and I can just use that to either go and get, you know, something else that I think might be useful for the next turn or two. Then yeah, I will. But it's that information that I think is the most critical piece, right? Because you're always trying to protect information, right? I will scoop to protect information. I think that's something that's fairly common
correct,
as well,
correct,
right?
Correct.
If you're about to win and you're trying to search my library or, you know, something like, no, I don't want you to have that information. I'd rather scoop. I can see the writings on the wall. I don't want you to have that information, right? Information is incredibly powerful in Magic. Everything from, you know, what's in your hand to, you know, what your intentions may be, to all the cards that are in your library, right? And Cube is definitely no exception to that. And this may lead us on, and I know we kind of kerfuffled around on whether or not we were going to talk about this, but I actually think this is a great opportunity with what we've just talked about is
yeah.
protecting the information of the draft itself.
Correct.
Right? Because what we don't do is have any protection, right? We sit around a table, everybody draws, everybody drafts, everybody, you know, arranges their cards, builds their decks. There's no information that isn't available to anyone else, right? You're not walking off and going into
yeah,
another room. There's no screen or nothing.
Well, I'm going to interject that because we were just kind of meta conversation and we called a good friend, Chris Morup, who's been on a previous episode. He's the one that did the Popper episode with Sam, aka Sandwich, right? Check out those cubes. They're amazing.
Yep.
But one of the things that we're kind of going over, and it's yeah, we play casual here at UberCube amongst our friends, and I know everyone else does that. But I got to thinking, like in the MTGO, sideboards have relevancy because the first time you play against an opponent, you have no idea what you're facing.
Exactly.
So your game is very, back to that poker episode, it's very learning on tells and cues and trying to see what they're showing to see if they're on reanimator or artifact deck or whatever, aggro. You'll pick it up quick.
Yeah.
But once you know that, then your sideboard has relevancy. That kind of leads to that information question that we talked about whilst drafting. I was thinking about getting some DM screens. It's not something I'm use all the time, but I thought it'd be kind of a fun idea just if while we were drafting, because we're doing deck buildings, because I know we are casual players and we're not glancing cross table.
Yeah.
But I think it gives relevancy to our sideboard and to our builds. If we had that little bit of privacy while we were building, it's not that you're staring across the table at your opponent, but I can see green and I can see blue. And then I just know they're Simic, right?
Right.
It didn't really mean a lot, but it does, inadvertently influence your decisions during the gameplay. And as a good friend Chris brought up, you don't know who you're going to be playing against. It's going to be randomized. I get it. But I just thought it was a neat idea that I threw out to the community. I was thinking about testing this idea out just for funsies.
And we already talked about this in a sort of pre-recording rambling as well, but what if there's money on the table?
Yeah, we did talk about that.
Or if you're playing for, you know,
the game
sometimes
got,
you'll, you know.
If the game got real, if the game got real cereal, or aka my friend Kevin brought over his tribe, that are, all of these are like borderline pro players, and I just want to put on my super game face, because I go from fun and jank playing with Stu to like suddenly I'm just this stonewall ex-military, don't mess with me, mono white.
Yes.
It's a different type of, but anyways.
I'm drafting to win now.
This is 100% a tangent to the conversation. It was just an idea we had, but let's go back to the point that we were discussing. It was about the counterspell tension versus a demonic tutor, and about the timing as to when you should do that. Do you allow that information to leave? Your current information has now transitioned.
Yes.
Right? To knowledge versus, I have no clue what you just got. I'm going to have to assume that you're not going to bait and switch me. Let's move over to our next scenario.
So, probably, I think one of the most classic questions, do you bolt the bird?
Do you bolt the bird? Yes. So it's timing based. So Stu and I, we do this. We sit around. We do the thing that we do here at UberCube, and we've enjoyed these pit heads, and we're just kind of meta back and forth.
Yep.
At what point is the bird relevant?
Turn one, do you bolt the bird?
Yes.
Turn two, do you bolt the bird?
Yes.
Turn three, do you bolt the bird?
Becomes super questionable at this
turn point. Turn two, do you counterspell the bird? Is counterspell too powerful of a card compared to Lightning Bolt to use against a Birds of Paradise?
Can we side by side them? Okay, so
can you?
The point we're making is that the bird is building a trajectory for a deck in order to get to the real threat. The bird is, in fact, not the threat. Well, it could be. Theoretically, it could have a piece of equipment on. We won't take that away from said bird. But the bird's
intention...
We're
not hurting the bird's feelings calling it.
But the bird can get over it. The point of the bird is to take you to the next threat. You're going into the mid-range steps,
yes,
which becomes suddenly threatening for the counter control music.
Turn
idea,
one,
right?
Birds of Paradise turns into turn two, Oko, can turn
correct
into turn three, Questing
so,
Beast.
It's a thousand permutations that we could discuss. But do you bolt the bird, turn one... Absolutely, in my mind, it seems like a one-for-one trade-off. It's literally one red, Lightning Bolt, three damage, versus Birds of Paradise, one forest, flying, add one mana of any color. The bolt's faster than the bird. You get the bird.
Absolutely.
But then there's a trajectory that now begins to happen. At one point, do you stop investing resources in said bird? And that is what we're kind of talking about. How far do you allow your opponent to transition to continue to go to that next level? Because that's what everybody's doing in this game, is they're leveling up. Resources are being acquired. The Monopoly Bank is getting larger.
Exactly.
Mr. Moneybags is getting fatter.
Yeah,
and then it begins to get lost on your capability to control the situation.
Yeah.
So bolting the bird, it's a neat scenario. So now we're going to ask another question. At what point on turn one, this is for the audience, do you dismember the bird?
This is
a neat idea. Bolt's
cool
so clean, right? Bolt's clean.
Incredibly clean.
I would like to put up...
But what is the fundamental difference between do you dismember and do you bolt the bird, right?
Life apparently to most players is just a resource.
It is just a resource.
But I'm going to throw this up on the Twitters because this is going to happen after this episode goes out, mm-hmm, once we release it. Do you dismember the bird? Are you willing to pay for a life to kill a bird, and does it have that much value to you?
And also, yes, it's one for one, right? That's generally considered, you know, sort of the solid point, right? I'm more than happy to give up my one card, my one, you know, piece of attrition that you're trading off, right? My one bolt, my one counterspell for your one spell. But then when does the power level of the individual card that you're using become relevant, and when do you start to consider that with the timing, right? Because bolting a bird, all right, you're only giving up one card for one, that's fine. You're also only giving up the potential to do three damage. Is that really a huge deal? I ain't worried about that after turn two or turn three.
Yeah, the three damage starts transitioning towards lethal later.
It can.
Yeah, so you take out the resource.
But dismember.
Yeah.
That's a -5/-5.
It is, in fact.
Now you're talking. And I've had to give up four life to do so on turn one.
So have
maybe
we,
two life
have we
on
done
turn
this
two
to break the tempo of the opponent at a cost of our own?
Exactly.
Right?
And maybe, like, do I know what you're what you've got in your deck? Is this game two?
Yeah, we're gonna go game one.
Have I been peering my little beady eyes over your over at your deck when you were building it to see
DM what five screen?
What five toughness do you have? You know, do you have a Gurmag angler or something like that?
That might
be a little bit more, you know.
So we kind of wanted to talk about the whole idea of this is more of the way this conversation started sprouting with he and I was reactive versus proactive. We were going to totally exclude the idea of hand stripping from this conversation. And we wanted to talk about removal and counter magic and about the decisions that come up in all of the, I guess it's the multiverse of decisions that can sway these. But using these fundamental just bolt versus bird, Counterspell versus Demonic Tutor, I thought it was a good platform for a player to start really getting that, you know, that brain stew going, so they can start kind of thinking about at what point would you not, when would you let the Demonic Tutor slip by? Do you let the Demonic Tutor slip by? Do you like the idea of no longer having knowledge predicting that the counterspell is going to get the real threat? Or was the Demonic Tutor the actual threat?
That's right.
Because it was getting something that ramped it forward, like, I don't know, a basic forest. Doesn't have to get fancy here.
Right.
It's just a thing they needed. It was the threat. You just did unbeknownst to you.
Exactly.
The same thing with the bird. You allowed the bird to exist. Do we let the bird continue to give them resources and provide them resources, or do we waste a potential kill spell? Because we're on a clock, 20 life, three for one is pretty good with the lightning bolt, right? But we've now chosen to bolt the bird. I think that some of these two scenarios that you and I went through, and this is my personal opinion, have become a little bit autonomous, where people feel like these are the responses because they were told by the elder magic player, always bolt the bird.
Yeah.
Let the demonic tutor slide. Let it go by because it's not a big deal. That's not the threat.
No. The target is always the threat, not the tutor.
Correct. But
is it?
Is it? That's the question mark here,
yes,
right?
It probably is most of the time.
Okay, we're going to go with 95%. Old elder magic player is correct. But I wanted to get everybody thinking a little bit here about there's a little bit more dynamics to this. It's not so black and white in this conversation. I think it's a little bit more meta about those decisions. So
we had a
couple more points that we kind of wanted to stew upon here with Stu. And it was talking about when we first build a cube, the counter magic that we decide to put in there, and we're going to focus on another card, and it's going to be Force of Will.
Yeah.
And Force of Will was a topic that he and I kind of went back and forth, and this will be our last scenario that we'll go through. When is Force of Will powerful, and when is it not powerful? And I'm going to lay it out there. I host Force of Will, and for those who are not familiar, it is pay 2 blue, 3 colorless, pay 1 life, exile a blue card from your hand, correct?
That's correct.
And
Counter target
spell. And it's basically free magic. That's the choice. You can either do the 5 and hard cast it, and or you can do the free magic and pay 1 life, pitch the blue spell in addition to Force of Will, and you've got your free spell.
Exactly.
All right. When is that card powerful and when is it not?
It's always powerful.
Well, so
let's just get that out
the way. It's not. One of the interesting meta questions that we had is, circumstantially speaking, I run it in my powered 540 vintage.
Of course.
And it's power max. Although 540 is, you know, we can all agree that it's not the most streamlined because it doesn't have Storm in there, as Stu has discussed on numerous occasions. However, I also run Force of Will in my 360 Horror Cube, which is like an Innistrad-based cube, and I'll put these up. I also run it in my Artifact Cube, however, I do not run it in my La Femme Fatale Cube. Now, each one of these are huge power levels. The card itself, Force of Will, fundamentally speaking, it's still just the card.
Right.
But the power level of the environments has, in my opinion, flattened the capability of said card, where free spells don't matter. Powered Vintage, Force of Will, is considered one of the creme de la cremes of counter magic.
Yeah.
Right,
top 2, top 3.
Yeah, yeah, we can all do the argues, mana drains versus. It's going to happen all day. I don't care.
No,
the point is that the environment is specifically weighs into the power factor of a card.
Correct.
Whether or not people want to realize that or not.
Yeah,
and it has a thing there. Do you have any thoughts on that particularly?
Yeah, and the reason I agree. Right, when you think about, let's look at the vintage Power Cube, right? And I'll even sort of reference the Modo Vintage Cube, right? If I'm drafting Storm, right? I'll use that as an archetypal example. I'm drafting Storm. When am I trying to win?
Turn one.
I'm trying to win turn one. Trying to win maybe even turn two, right? But I would prefer to win in the first turn.
Sure.
The ability to be able to utilize your natural resources, if you will.
Right.
Right? Which is a combination of the mana that is available to you through lands and mana rocks and the cards in your hand. And then you've got Force of Will, which is kind of an unnatural way of interacting with your opponent. Right?
Right.
I don't have to use my mana to get the efficiency, or really the efficiency is the fact that I don't have to use my mana, right? So now it becomes the most powerful protection for me trying to combo off on turn one or turn two, because who knows what my opponent might have,
right?
Right. But that gives me an incredible amount of protection. Does it matter that it's turn one though?
No.
Not really, because what if it's turn six or turn seven and I'm trying to use all of my mana and all I've got is three cards in my hand, but or even if I've got 10 cards in my hand,
right.
I want to use all of my mana because there are some ways to cheat creatures out with reanimate and so on and so forth, but I want to put Primeval Titan on the battlefield.
Sure.
I want to tap six mana. I don't want to put a prime time down on the battlefield.
Sure.
I don't want to have to tap mana for my counter spells.
No.
I want to just be able to, I've got this useless blue card in mind. I want to just, you know, get rid of that one. Bang. Counter spell.
Super
powerful. Does it really matter the power level of the card that I'm trying to cast?
It does, in fact. Okay. Let's...
Dependent on the strength of the cube.
You're all right. Strength of the cube, and then whether or not the threat assessment's within the cube. Because power level... I guess that's kind of the core question. And I know we're gonna wrap these different three subsets we've done of scenarios. But in this particular... Do the cards within the environment do a paradigm shift and track the cards within the environment? What I mean by that is... The power level of the cards, the threshold, the threat assessment, the levels, do they correlate directly to the playstyle within, like, Force of Will, does it track organically if I, say, go from an Elder Gargaroth to suddenly I'm playing just some vanilla 3-drop that's the most threatening thing in the cube environment?
Exactly.
It's still the most threatening thing within the cube environment.
Yeah.
Right? So Force of Will's power level... I believe the strength can kind of paradigm shift and follow it, but at the same time, I'm not sure that it stays at the highest power level because the threats can now be assessed by the individual, I guess, within the environment, environment. Yeah, super meta conversation.
And I think speed is what a lot of it comes down to, right? How fast are you? How fast is the cube? How fast is the deck that you're able to build with that cube? And how much do you need those individual pieces of protection, right? With, you know, with the vintage cube, again, with things like, you know, playing Storm or Reanimate, some of those pieces that you have that you're trying to get out onto the battlefield or those spells that you're trying to cast, you don't have the redundancy to just, you know, in maybe a slower cube where I'm trying to play a creature. Oh, you're going to Force of Will it? Okay, well, that's not the end of the world. Maybe I'm playing a burn deck or maybe I'm playing some kind of aggro or mid-range. That one card isn't going to be the be-all and end-all of whether or not I have a win condition or a way to get over the finish line, right?
Right.
Whereas I think in the more powered environments, the reason why that does maybe become much more powerful, dare I say, because you've got less redundancy and because you've got more sort of quotation marks key pieces, right? Like Entomb, like Reanimate, like Yawgmoth's Will, etc., where those cards can be quite fundamental to your win strategies.
Yeah.
And therefore being able to protect it for nothing other than one extra card in your hand without having to invest mana, I think that makes it very, very strong.
All right, so let's kind of go through. We're going to kind of go towards a wrap up and we're going to re-ask these questions based on the knowledge. And I'm going to pose these questions to Stu. Stu, do you counterspell a Demonic Tutor?
No.
Always?
No.
Okay. Next question. Stu, do you always Bolt the Bird?
No.
Stu, is Force of Will power level directly associated to the power level of the cube, or is it too powerful for any environment?
No, I do think that it can scale. I would say of all of the like S-tier counterspells, I would say that I would consider that one of the safest.
It can uniquely scale. All right, now ask me the same question, Stu.
Do you Bolt the Bird?
Yeah. Turn one, turn two. Gets questionable.
There we go.
I'm not yes and no in this every time. All
right. Exactly. Well, that was the question, right? Do you Bolt the Bird?
Do I cancel the Demonic Tutor? Yeah. I think I might.
Would you counterspell?
I'm willing to do so. Yeah.
Would you counterspell?
I like that controlled knowledge. Would I counterspell a bird? No. I will allow the bird to leak by.
And why would you not counterspell the bird?
I don't have a good reason. It's more of a, it's kind of like a hot bowl of chili on a winter morning. It's just comfort food for me at this point, right? Like, I know whatever's coming next must be worse than said bird, because bird is more of a setup card. It's a, it's
I'm
a
not
speed
doing
bump.
It because Counterspell to me is worth, dare I say, it's worth too much.
It's worth too much.
It's worth far it's, too
it,
much.
Yeah, I use it from a protection standpoint. Yep. And then the last one, you know, we've kind of summarized all these ideas. And I know this was a super meta, not like we talked about before in the poker episode. Nothing about this conversation was, we basically covered three different topics, wildly, vastly different.
Yep.
But they were scenarios that we wanted to run through and kind of pick each other's brains on, is there a situation where you don't fall into the meta trap, the automated response, yep, that everybody says, oh yeah, bolt the bird.
Yep.
No, never counterspell the demonic tutor.
Well,
and force of will is just so OP. You can never. Those are three different things that I've heard throughout. It's not, in fact, actually. It scales exceptionally well with your environment. It seems confusing because it's a free spell.
No, I think it does. But this is where, at least the discussion that I had, where I wanted it to go, right? Because now we're going to come back. Let's get our sanity back on again. This is a cube channel.
Yep.
So now let's look at it from a cube power level perspective, because we've kind of brushed on that when we've talked about the, you know, the power level of the different counter spells, you know, and you can, you know, apply that logic to either counter magic, removal, so on and so forth, right? Counter spells, counter magic in general, and how they range, how they scale,
right,
to the power level of the cube itself.
Yeah.
Okay. And do they belong almost?
Is it intrinsic? Is it something that someone has just told you doesn't belong?
Or, psychologically, do you look at counter magic in the same way that you look at removal? As a cube curator.
I do, in fact.
Okay.
When I do my portions and ratios, I don't use... I'll give you my... This is my personal recipe that I use whenever I'm evaluating my cubes. And we're going to do a much more enhanced episode on this idea. But when I'm overlooking my cubes, I use what I traditionally use is about a 15% rule is where my starting point is, plus or minus 3%. That is my starting point. And within that said rule that I count within is going to be your permission spells, your removal spells, hard and soft magic removal, basically creatures that enter the battlefield, but anything that causes, that requires any additional setup or obstacles to be overcome, that I don't count that within the threshold.
That's fair.
And then when I'm overlooking my cube, I'd kind of my base build within my removal spectrum, including counter magic in my removal spectrum, because it does, you know, it does stop armies from marching, basically,
it at does.
The end of the day. And it's that proactive versus reactive stance that we talked about before, counter magic. Well, while it's knowledge versus not knowledge on the table, counter magic still has a timing issue that does, you know, stop the army from marching.
Yeah.
So you wanna be cognizant of that as a curator, in my opinion, and ensure that you don't oversaturate an environment with too much, quote unquote, the word removal. And that's a huge spectrum, and it, you know, has a lot of meanings for a lot of people.
And we're using it right now to we're talk using about counter magic to use, you know, we can talk about removal in the same, you know, we talked about lightning bolt.
The thing was, do I evaluate dismember. Them in the same vein? Yeah, the answer is yes. One is a counter magic, as he was asking to me, is when you have no present knowledge and you have to snap respond. It's kind of like calling an audible in football.
Right.
Whereas removal is kind of like you're just making a play to try to get the touchdown because you have knowledge of the field.
Yeah.
And it's two different stances within the same game. Sorry, I went to football there, guys, but it's a great sport, American football specifically.
Yeah.
But anyways, in the grand scheme of things, I think they are a certain amount equivalent. It just comes down to the timing aspects of said cards.
Okay. So, and again, this was another part of the discussion that we had during our pre-recording little chit-chat, was sort of the sub-meta within a cube, right?
Right.
So I talked about, let's say you kind of top-end out at maybe the six drop.
Right.
Right? I've always kind of looked at counterspell as kind of the absolute middle of the road counter magic. It's two blue. Yeah, it counters any spell, which is awesome. But it is two blue pips.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is two mana.
I think it's a pillar of the idea.
I think it is. And yes, it's called counterspell.
It's literally bought itself into the idea. I mean, so, it's paid its dues.
So where in like the sub-meta of a cube would you kind of look at that midpoint, right?
Okay, yeah.
So if you've got your six and seven drops, would you consider counterspell to still be sort of that middle-of-the-road standard?
You're
or
asking,
would you look at like a cancel maybe, which is one extra, still does exactly the same. It's one card for probably one card. It's just hard removal. It does cost that one extra pip, but it's kind of splitting the things down the middle.
Conversation you're doing is
it's more timing.
It's not just timing, it's currency conversion.
Exactly.
So like as a curator, you want your players not to overly invest their resources and want to come back from a good time because they paid seven for something and you traded for two. And that if that happens repeatedly, then you're gonna not gonna get players sit down
is that an efficiency of a single piece of removal slash counter magic, or is it more a density of just the number of counter spells that you have within that sort of, if you want to talk about 2 to 3 drops, how many do you want to put in there? How many feel bads do you want to put in
there? The soft answer is both. So I've got a new cube that I built recently. It's the Munson cube based on Eddie Munson from Stranger Things. Yeah. And I'm going to share this with the world soon. So it's 180 cube and we'll be doing this on a podcast in the future here.
I'm going to spoil
everything.
It is metal. Spoiler.
AF.
Spoiler. It's glorious.
But in that particular environment, there's no counter magic because it's Jund, with the exception of Tybalt's Trickery, which we're not really going to count that as counter magic. But I
use it as counter magic because it won me a game.
Yeah, but the environment's intentionally slower within said cube. And so what I did is actually slowed it down, so I'm no longer running the highly efficient, like Murderous Cuts. I'm running the Ruinous Paths of the world. I'm running Murder because I didn't want it so that you have this... this huge threat that you drop down. I think I just put in there recently Vengevine or whatever.
Vengevine.
And I didn't want the player to actually invest those resources just to have it traded off by a highly efficient counter removal spell without a cost. So I am a firm believer that your environment needs to scale with your creatures need to be relevant to your removal and your counter magic. They all need to scale. It's almost like it's a paradigm shift. They need to move in tangent with one another to a degree, but not so much that they're flat and you don't want to counter magic and remove anyways, because the cost efficiency costs you more than what the card's worth. I don't want to pay 5 to kill a 5.
No.
But I'm okay with, I think in that environment, that scenario, I think the relevancy is I want to pay 3 to remove a threat that costs 5.
Right.
And I think players, so if you had to pick a differential that I think is a very safe differential, I'd say 2 ± 2 on the mana value curve is a fair place to put your removal, your counter magic versus your threats.
Okay.
Does that make sense? On a medium.
Okay.
And that's how, and this is nothing but a framework at the end of the day. It's a skeleton for a cube, but that's how I do it.
It's an interesting, it's a good theory, and I like the fact that you've kind of got some hard numbers there rather than just,
When I've got 6 cubes at this point, and my fundamental base that I do use as a curator is 15% on removal concept. Right. I do 10 to 12% on land concept, and this is ±3% is what I use.
Okay.
And I utilize that as a framework while I'm building. This is for the skeleton, right? And then on my removal suite and all that, depending on the tempo and the threat assessment of the cube, I use a mana value differential. It's intentional. So the murder matches the 5 drop threat that's definitely slowed down. It's a framework for building.
Okay.
That's how most of them come out the gate. It's not to be braggadocious, but I mean, my Munson cube came out with 6 cuts with 12 people playing it so far. I mean, it's a methodology and it's not my intention, but having a good way of framework is pretty important. And a methodology is pretty important.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Does that answer your question in the most long-winded method? I went around circles.
No, it's
there.
Great. It's great to hear the logic because, you know, counter spells don't really seem to get talked about in the same way as removal does, right?
Right.
I think that's fairly, you know, you go and look on social media or, you know, any kind of discussion. Counter magic certainly seems to be looked at a lot more of a boogeyman than just a removal spell does, right? Even though I've definitely heard tales of, you know, players that have got upset about, you know, a counter spell being used against them or a removal spell being used against them.
Counter spells issue an emotional response.
I agree. Because there's nothing worse than seeing that beautiful card in my hand that I'm like, man, this is my game winner right here. I'm so excited about turning this creature sideways or having this enchantment out and some... person across the board.
The Blue Mages. I blame the Blue Mages.
No, I don't want you doing that. No. Not today. Put that right there in that little pile, underneath your deck. So it does give an emotional response, but it's such a critical aspect of, I think magic is defined obviously by how interactive it is and about all the different parts. You know, you can counterspell a creature, you can remove a creature, those things, they belong in the same discussion, I think, when we're having this quote unquote meta discussion that we are right now. And then you can sort of expand it out, right? So when you're thinking about your cubes and you're talking about how you're building them and how you're building in that removal suite, which includes the counter spells, which includes the removal, how much do they belong, right? And where within, all of the timings do you start taking into consideration?
I do.
The CMC, right?
I do.
And
mana value. We're going to correct you. Boomer magic here.
The mana value, right? What does it impact within the cube, right? Because it's all very well and good having a bunch of Doomblades in there, right? Or a Doomblade.
Yeah.
Or if you've got 10 different Doomblade effects, I'm talking literally like mirrored, and then all the big threats are black.
Then so that's intentional.
Kind of.
I could go off on a whole episode just about this conversation. Using my Munson cube, the Lord of Metal, I use these fundamental concepts of everything would not be the most efficient kill spells. They actually had to have targets. So I do run Doomblade in a Jund cube. So that essentially takes down a third of the cube that's, not viable to Doomblade because it's hyper efficient. Whereas then I put Murder in because it's intentionally not efficient. Not efficient, and I wanted it in that environment, so everything comes at a cost. It's a metal cube, man. It's metal as F. You have to play Pantera while doing it.
Yes.
Everybody has to go nuts and drink a little whiskey in the bottle, and you'll be all right. But yeah, so I wanted to tempo the cube to match the removal suite within that, and then kind of to bring this all back to full circle in that original, tangential conversation we just had, is regarding Force of Will tracking actually organically
the
within my
level.
Cubes. It's a uniquely scalable because it tracks as the different power differential, the power creep within the cube goes up and down, as does Force of Will, strangely enough.
That's right.
Whereas you get a card like Mana Drain and it does not do that. It's incapable of doing that. It becomes such a mana value trade-off for the opponent that it's unable to actually track the power curve within a cube environment.
Yep.
Very cool. This has been a wild meta episode, part two of the poker episode, where we talked about, for anybody that learned how to have better meetings and postures within meetings and learned nothing about magic in our last one.
Always try and stand up.
Establish dominance within said meeting. Or if you got fired because of that episode because you did the things I told you to do, I apologize in advance.
Yes.
But other than that, this has been a fun, what we're going to do with this particular episode is we've thrown out these three questions, and what I'm looking for is the listeners to provide. I'm looking for unique feedback. I'm not looking for yes and no's. Do you bolt the bird? And what scenarios do you not bolt the bird?
Yeah.
Do you dismember the bird?
Do you do it on turn two?
It's an interesting question.
Or turn three.
Do you let the demonic tutor just slip by? Do you let it just go through the coffee filter with giving up said knowledge that you had knowledge? What do you have? I have a tutor. I don't want you to have that. Now you're going into the abyss. You have no idea what you have.
Yep.
You're taking that poker stuff that we talked about. You've now given up knowledge, assuming that they're getting a threat. And then the last one was Force of Will, interesting counter magic that uniquely scales strangely with environments. Whereas you take something like Mana Drain and it becomes OP. You can't actually just inject that into any environment.
You cannot.
Because it doesn't
far too strong.
Does not transition with environments. Other than that, this has been a fun, meta, weird episode. We wanted to have a little bit of fun. We realized that this is janky. This is Stu and I just...
it's outside of our usual comfort zone, I think, for what
we got a little weird.
We don't normally go meta.
We wanted to go meta.
Wanted to go meta.
Yeah, exactly. We
wanted
to do something kind of different. We just kind of whatever, we're vibing. That's it. Actually, we started typing. We called this the vibe episode. We started vibing. But anyways, other than that, we really appreciate you guys listening. We've had a great time. I would love for Stu to take us out to the socials because he has them memorized, whereas I do not. And that would be glorious.
Please. Thank you. So, As always, you can find us on Twitter at UberCubeMTGPod. You can always reach us via email, and that email address is UberCubeMTGPodcast@gmail.com. And check us out on the socials. We've got links to the Discord in there. We'd love to see you guys come by, hang out, talk about all things Cube and whatever else takes your fancy. Also want to talk about KubeCon, which is happening this year, 2022, from October 20th to 23rd in Madison, Wisconsin. We're going to be there, Anthony and I. We'd love to see you guys there. Come say hi.
Yeah.
Buy me a beer.
Buy me a beer.
Whatever, takes your fancy. But definitely would love to see you guys all out there. And as always, we really appreciate all of our listeners. Thank you so much for taking your time to hang out with us.
Yeah.
And if you really enjoy the content, which we hope that you do, please feel free to give us a 5-star review, leave a comment.
We're all about that feedback.
We love the feedback.
Probably opening myself up to the Internet of Things there, the IoTs. But the reality is, in order for us to provide this passion that we want to for the community, this is not about Stu and I. This is about the game that we love and the community that we 100%. Love, right? So we're all about the tuning and tweaking and constructive criticism.
Yep.
And a lot of people don't ask for that, but we are in fact asking for that.
Yep.
We want this to be what the community desires, right?
And exactly.
We have our expectations, we have our dreams, but we want to make sure they pseudo align, right?
Yep, 100%.
Other than that, wanted to point out we in fact have we talked about before, a Patreon. And within said Patreon, we have, I don't want to use the word privileges, but we have advantages or things that we're going to provide where there'll be
perks.
Perks is a great word. Probably perks. Perks will be the word. That within that, we will have do you want to be part of the discussion? Do you want to help us framework some of these discussions? Do you want to be a listener that interjects an idea? Do you want us to do a live commentary with you?
Yep.
That's all involved in
Cube
the Patreon.
Review,
yeah, we've got all
Cube
that.
Cube Clinic.
Uber Clinic, which Uber is still Clinic. A highly pretentious name that we shall not shed the skin of because it's kind of fun and cute.
It's awful, but we're going to embrace
We're going to embrace it. We're going to embrace the horror, as they say. Other than that, I just want to say, the thing that we always say, happy Cuban!